The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Throwdown. What is this? Episode 567. I am your host and I'm joined by Carlos Romero.
Yo, 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 what's going on?
And Brian Manjoma.
What up, what up?
So yeah, you might notice there's quite a bit of people, missing from this episode. Tony was presenting an award for best DLC at the New York Video Game Awards. If you want to see it, it's actually up right now. I think you could find it on GameSpot. It's all done. It's all over. But he's schmoozing and all that stuff. Don't know where Brett is, but Brett is the Brett of the Wild. Chris, we haven't heard anything from Chris, but if he feels up to it. Oh, wow! Speak of the devil, and he shall appear. Sup, Chris? Yo. So yeah, I was telling the folks that we have a couple of Tony's was at the Game Awards, the Video Game Awards, New York Game Awards. So that's actually up now. So if anybody wants to check it out, it's all ready there for you. You can see the plethora of AI jokes that they were putting on. There was a couple of presenters that fakely wrote these AI speech. Not speeches, but they had like fake like AI like presenting like rhetoric or the little and they just said it said stuff like, hey, would you like me to make this seem more sincere, stuff like that. It was is what it is. So yeah, apparently it's like the 10th anniversary of the New York Game Awards. So it's a lot longer than the Canadian ones, right?
Anyway, I got a question for you then, Manny. I didn't get to catch the show, so I'm curious. What game won on the category that Tony announced?
That one was what did win? The Pinocchio game.
Liza P.
Liza P. Yeah, the Liza P. DLC won that one. And they actually did have the director of the game and the DLC, who's Korean, come to New York and do it. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Looks like I just froze.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, anyway, as long as you can hear me, then that's good. Yeah. I guess we can get things started. So our first question is from the gaming engineer.
All right. Shout out to the gaming engineer. His question is, has anyone seen the tweet from Jez Corden claiming Xbox will release an ad tier of cloud gaming? How much lower can we get in this cursed industry?
I actually haven't seen that quote, but that would be insane if they did decide to do an ad tier. Like, how would that even work? Would they just like literally just throw a bunch of ads on your games all over the place? Like,
yeah. I'm guessing like when you're choosing games like to pick, you'll probably get some ads there. Maybe even like when you're playing a game, it'll be interesting. I mean, if they do this during a game,
yeah.
It's like, hey, your game is in full screen. You're playing Gears of War and it's like full screen. And then the window gets a little bit smaller. And
yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Like a commercial on a live sports broadcast.
Yeah, it does like a lower third. It just moves it over to the side. Well,
part of your HUD is just a constant, ad stream.
It's like that the moving Chiron in the bottom in the sports games when they're like announcing other scores, but it's advertisements. Oh man, yeah, that's no bueno, man.
You open up your map to find waypoints, and it says this map brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, or one of the ones from years ago was during the presidential campaign. There was actually like billboards. I think it was in Burnout Paradise that were actually like Or was it Need for Speed that had literally like open ads that would just,
yeah, I think it was Need for Speed. Yeah.
Yeah. They would actively change real ads. Yeah. So they had one of them was like for the Barack Obama administration when he was running and stuff like that. So, and I know a lot of people were pretty pissed about that one where they were just like, oh man, why are there ads in my game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think this, I mean, they're probably going to do this just because, I mean, that's the logical step that these companies would take to make more money. And also gets people in the door much easier, because if you do an ad tier, you get to charge less, I guess. And, you know, that ad revenue makes up for whatever price of the subscription for the companies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but it does. I mean, people were complaining about the Xbox dashboard. Remember, and I don't know if they fixed this, but Adam would complain mm-hmm. about this all the time. It's like they have a whole bunch of ads in the dashboard, you know, just the regular old dashboard when you sign into your Xbox account.
Yeah, there's like all these different ads and things. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of these, you know, streaming companies that are essentially all of a sudden now add, you know, because they can't support themselves with their own subscriptions or subscription company. And they're like, okay, now you get the ad version if you pay less money for everything. So it's like, what's the point? You know,
yeah.
if you're subscribing to something, why do you need to have ads?
Yeah. You know? And this is, and the most nefarious part about all of this is they'll do the whole thing where maybe there'll be a free option of Game Pass where it's like, oh, there's a free tier, but it's with ads, and it'll be pretty good, right? Like, be like, oh, you know, just a little ads here and there, and it doesn't bother anyone. But eventually, what this leads to is it's like you're gonna get more ads, you know, and then you're gonna get more ads, and then it just becomes so unbearable where, you know, a whole bunch of millions of people who signed up to the free version of Game Pass are getting a bunch of ads. And it's like, oh, well, now they have to subscribe to the premier one that doesn't have ads. So that's how they get you. You know, they make you go in love, fall in love with a certain subscription or something, and they just make it unbearable to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay for it to enjoy like how you used to.
What do you think, Brian?
I'm not surprised, because just the way that things are going, it's everything is first you subscribe and then there's ads. I mean, like you take any streaming service these days, they have like an ad tier for some strange reason. So yeah, it makes total sense why they would do it. I'm not happy that they're doing it, but I don't see the reason why they would not do it, given the state of things. And who knows, this may just push people away from it, or in their case, hopefully push people towards the non-ad version. But I guess we'll see when we get the numbers, or if we get the numbers.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess that's it for that one. Next one up is from next two questions are from George W. Cush.
So let's go with the second one first, because the first one, yeah. I think I need to change some things real quick. The second question, are there any gaming announcements that would make you want to adapt to VR gaming? I always thought Nintendo games would adapt well to VR. A native Zelda game akin to the older 64 titles would be a must for me. So any type of IPs or anything that would make you adapt to VR if they decide to do it?
Personally, no. I really don't. It's sort of like the motion controls from the original Wii. They're a nice, you know, parlor trick, you know, nice, you know, but it's not something I ultimately want to buy a console for. And I feel like that's, to be honest, I feel like that's what's happening with Meta right now, where they realize that this investment into VR isn't really, you know, really working out for them. So yeah, I think it's a nice niche thing, but I don't think it'll be it's not worth the amount of money that it takes to develop those.
Yeah, I feel like I agree with you. I don't think there's anything that would convince me to do that. Well, actually, I'm trying to think if there's a title of a game that I'm heavily expected and it's only available on that platform, then I might consider it. Like, for example, when Half-Life Alyx was announced, I wasn't sure if this was a, you know, successor, like a Half-Life Type 3 type of thing. But like if they actually did Half-Life 3, it'd be more tempting. If they do like a Portal 3 and it's only available on VR, I would have to think about it because, you know, Portal is, you know, one of my favorite franchises, even though it's just only two titles. But, you know, I would do anything to go back to that world, you know, and enjoy
that game. There was a Portal-ish game. It was the Aperture Science VR game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it had your boy, Johnson in it.
Oh, you mean the Aperture Desk Job?
Yeah, the Aperture Desk Job.
I think for the masses, if like let's say if we're just talking about everyone, I don't think VR is going to be a suitable platform for a large amount of people that would adopt anything like this. But I don't know, man. I don't know how VR is ever gonna, you know, dig into the market like that. But yeah, for me, it had to be something really special, like a really special game. And even some of the sequels for games, like if they say the Mass Effect 4 is announced, well, I sure as hell am not going to be excited because, you know, of what BioWare is doing. Like if you say, okay, GTA 6 only on VR, you might get a lot of people. Maybe not me, but a lot of people.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like even like, I don't know if they would ever put like a numbered one. But I mean, granted, this is a hypothetical question, but I don't know if they would ever put like a numbered title of a game on VR without there being at least a, you know, non-VR version, right? Like, you know, one of the better implementations of VR was like the Resident Evil, first person games. So, but I feel like them locking themselves down to just doing that is, I think if it ever does get put on, you know, it would always be like an additional option. Like, hey, you could play it on VR, you know?
Yeah.
That does make sense. Because they did add a first-person mode into GTA 5. So I can see them having a first-person mode in GTA 6 and someone modding in a VR thing. So not official, but having it be there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, is what it is. All right, I guess... oh, yeah, Chris, what about you? You probably...
No. I have the same answer you do. I don't think there's anything. I think I'd be, honestly, I think I'd be turned away if, like, well, something I loved was just, like, we're going VR only. Like, Elden Ring 2 is VR only. I'll be like, well, I guess I'm done.
Yeah, I guess I'm not playing these things ever again.
Yeah.
If they don't get you with that, I mean, they probably don't get you with anything. Yeah. Because I was going to ask you, Chris, let's say, like a hypothetical, like, let's say, and I know the answer is going to be no, but I just want to entertain it. Let's say when Resident Evil 7 was announced, you know, how they had the whole, you know, we're going back to form and it's first person.
Yeah.
And it had all the rave reviews. Like, let's say it was during that time and they said, oh, this is a VR only game. And would you have ever considered it at that time? Be like if it was only a VR only game, would you have considered it?
No, I would have been like, I'll wait for the regular version. I would just be a holdout to be, you know, because honestly, I would think that any fan of those games, is Resident Evil otherwise, is not gonna go, or I guess I'll go out and buy myself a headset. They'd probably be like, you know what, I'm just gonna wait this out, and you either make a console version or I'll keep. And what they would eventually do is just make a flat version. You know, so I wouldn't buy it.
Yeah. All right, so let's see.
All right.
Oh yeah, the first question that George W.
Yeah. So the first question from George W. Kush, with the state of how things are in the world, a lot of the political things going on, do you think this will affect gaming? Do you feel like this will be the downfall of gaming? Like, would this contribute to the downfall of gaming? I'm heavily editing the question just to, you know, we don't like to get too political. So, you know, apologies, George W. Kush, even though your name is kind of political. but it's, you know, it's a good one. So yeah, you know, like, the stuff going around the world, do you feel like, any of that would affect video games?
I don't know at least on here, he said that, he would be, he thinks the world would, thinks it'll come down and come to a crash. I don't actually think that. I don't think that gaming, I think just like, you know, how musicals were in the you know, during the World War II era and all that sort of stuff. I think these things are still will stick around as entertainment. I think the bigger factor, it won't be political things. I think the bigger factor will be actually the other side of things, the acquisition of technology. I think that'll be the bigger effect. Not, there's some countries that we have sort of weird relationships with and stuff like that, and they also manufacture quite a bit of our products, so that might affect things. But I don't know. But I don't think things initiatives that certain countries will do will fully affect everything. I think they'll still continue to make games. I think that maybe the content in the games might switch a little bit, though. Maybe to not mirror what is happening currently in the world, as we've seen happen before, when certain villains were changed around to not reflect certain people, stuff like that.
Yeah, I feel like more than anything, it's the economic ramifications that will affect the video game industry. We've seen it. We've seen the exorbitant amount of price hikes from various aspects of the gaming industry, with console prices going up, with video game prices going up in the past couple of years. And, you can't build a PC anymore, or at least you can't build a PC that's modern anymore without, paying crazy amounts of money. So the gaming industry, I feel like it's going on a collision course because of the economic turmoil is going around. So I feel like that's what's going to affect it. The other stuff, it might be more ancillary, but not in the way where video games will crash. So yeah, my two.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, we may see certain markets get cut off for briefly, like. If China invaded Taiwan, then I don't know how that would affect their studios and then the export of their games. Because if they decide if there's any kind of blockades, or if we intervene, then they may go, oh well, we're stopping exports to the United States. That would include their entertainment and their games. So we wouldn't see another Wukong, or all this stuff would stop. Would it affect gaming as a whole? I don't think so. You'd lose the market, right? And then other things would fill it. So I don't think gaming would shut down unless things would have to get extreme. You'd be talking like World War III broke out, and then gaming would stop, right? Stuff would get really really bad. I don't even want to think about that scenario. So I'm just gonna say, in the scope of his question, you just lose a market, but it wouldn't affect things overall. I think you just lose access to certain things, and then other things will still be accessible and available, and eventually things will simmer down, and then the market will open back.
Yeah. How about you, Brian?
First, I'd like to say I kind of laughed at Chris's statement about China invading Taiwan. I mean, why would China invade their own country? I don't understand.
oh, no.
But honestly, I can see how the current state of manufacturing is going to just slow down manufacturing of all platforms. So again, fewer consoles, fewer PCs. And I think because we're at a point where there's enough consoles out there that it shouldn't be too damaging. I mean, if this had happened at the same time the PS6 launched, then it would be really devastating, because then obviously, it's at the point where they want to shift the consoles, so you'd need more manufacturing, and the state of things will just kneecap it. So I think we're in a better position, obviously not a good position, but a better position, all things considered. And in terms of crashing the market, I think it'll mainly affect the AAA space, because there's always going to be some indie developers made out of 10, 5 people. I just get together and
or 33.
I was trying to avoid that number on purpose. But there'll always be like a small group of people that want to get something done and will get something done and out. So I think gaming will be fine. It's just that there won't be as many, as many Horizon Zero Dawns out there as there would be. Which, again, that always falls on the side of whether or not you like that game or not. But yeah, I can see how that will change things in that direction. So, again, for me, I'm fine. I like me some indie games that are obscure. This is one game called Claire that I think is very obscure. yes, thank you, Chris. So, yeah, I do think that there'll be some impact, but it's always hard to quantify it because, again, we don't know the outcome of when they wouldn't be an impact. So it's hard to say. But yeah, I think the current political climate will impact things. Hopefully things can recover in a few years' time. Or if not, then yeah, gaming is in somehow in a worse position than it's ever been.
Yeah. Well, see what happens, right? Next one up is from Eurocar 9.
Yo, man, shout out to that guy.
Yeah, man. What's up? How he been?
I mean, I heard he's doing good, but not better than Eurocar 2. But that's that's besides the point. what his question is, we're getting less and less great games, and gaming hardware is getting more and more expensive. My question is, what's the point of gaming?
The dark. Damn! Oh, that sounds like a person that's on recovery, like a on withdrawal syndrome or something. Like, I don't play no games. Go ahead.
Yeah, it sounds like he's definitely not doing as good as Eurocar 2. Eurocar 9 is going through stuff, man.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, joking aside, I mean, you think about it, like at least you don't need to kill yourself on trying to buy 100 titles at once that are really good on top of each other, right?
Hey,
I don't know. I mean, save money. What's the point of gaming? I mean, to be honest, like it doesn't. The thing about it is that now it seems like in the gaming space, everything is going to get artificially elongated, right? This generation is probably going to last a few more years longer than the rumors have said that they were going to be shipping in 2027. But I feel like it'll go a little bit longer than that, just to sort of give the industry a time for a certain bubble to burst and everybody get back to business. I mean, you hear stuff like Asus is now gone full AI. They're not even doing any sort of consumer products anymore, but they said they'll support whatever things they have, you know, with drivers and stuff. So I'm like, geez, man, every single one of these guys are all betting hard on this stuff. So I think the point of gaming is, I think that just now, I think what will happen is I think the fever pitch for the things will be a little bit more few and far between. Like, you know, you have your GTAs, you have your sort of big titles that jump in, but I think people will still continue to play. I think just, hey, you know, it's not like there isn't a shortage of games to play. It just may mean that the evolution of the new might change over a little bit. Maybe people might end up going back into their 50,000 Steam catalog, right? You know, to fill in the space. I mean, I know, obviously, even Tony said this, he doesn't go back, right? Even though he has all these games that he has to play. But I mean, maybe that's what it'll be. Maybe it'll just be like, okay, you know, you get me some good ones that are going to come out, and then you just, you know, go and play the old ones. I don't know. I've always been of the fairly, you know, I've played quite a bit of games, but I also play them fairly slow. I play them at my own speed and I wouldn't say I wish I stayed on top of it. I was so like, no, I just play, you know, as long as I play. But that's sort of how I used to play as a kid, where I was like, you know, your mom or your dad tells you, hey, you know, this is a $70 game, you better make this thing last. So I mean, that's the way I sort of play my games. Like, I play them until I fully complete them. So for some people that's a lot quicker than others. What do you think, Mr. Romero?
Well, funny you ask. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like I've been trying to figure out this question for a while now. Like, I just don't feel that same spark that I used to with video games. And I feel like that a lot of it has to do with the way that the industry is moving. There's just every year there's less and less creators of video games that I feel like are sort of, I don't know, inspired to make are inspired by the art of making video games. There's less and less of those people every year. And we have, like, you know, the whole commodification, the loot boxification, the games as a service, all of that, you know, taking over the industry. And it's ridiculous. I mean, even think about the Game Awards this past year, where
the headlining game was a hero shooter. That is it going to come out? We don't know. It's crazy just to, like, there's back in the day, like, there used to be, like, you didn't have a chance to breathe. Like Manny mentioned, you didn't have a chance to breathe. There's so many video games, like, you waste a lot of money, or in our case, it's probably just rent them, because back in the day, we used to rent games. They used to be, like, part of discussion all the time. And now it's, like, it's sparse. Like, there's not much that gets the people going these days. It's like, oh, Clair Obscur. We're still talking about that. And, like, well, what else came out that year? A couple of other things, but not, you know, Elden Ring. We're still talking about Elden Ring. That came out 3 years ago.
I mean, and the Silent Hill remakes Silent Hill F, which is sort of a new kind of a game in there. I don't know. There's some things in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's good games coming out, but I just feel like there's the whole, I'm trying to think of what the best wording for this is, because it's like, it's the motivation, the inspiration, like that part of video games for me, it is just almost non-existent. I feel like we're getting a hero shooter that does this, and we're getting the everyman game, or the everything game. It's like they got everything bagels. They got everything games. Yeah, like we got a lot of those. Here's another Souls-like game. There's for the 100th time, you know. So I don't know. To me, answering this question is difficult, because I just feel like the question asked. It's like there's less and less games that are, you know, more motivating and not, you know, breaking any barriers. And gaming is just getting way too expensive. Like, I'm not going to buy a console in 2027 if they come out that time. I think most of the chat is, or the of the Throwdown members are not going to get a console when they come out.
No, because it'll be like a repeat of this year. I mean, of this generation, where it's like, okay, you buy it, and then you'll be waiting for who knows how long until they finally get their stuff together to actually, you know, have some games on there. You know, they'll have that initial jump of stuff, and then it'll just be a desert.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
there's nothing wrong with waiting for it, to be honest.
Well, these days there is, because the consoles will go up in price.
Yes. Now, if you waited on a PlayStation 5 or a Xbox Series X and S, you're actually paying a lot more than you did when they first came out, which is insane to me. I literally bought the PS5 2023, I think. That's about when I bought it. Yeah, and it went up in price in the 3 years that I've had it, or 2 years, who knows?
That's crazy. Yeah. So every year, it just seems to go down. So hopefully, you know, I got to stay a little bit optimistic. Hopefully, the next generation of video game makers do some good things.
But they remember the dark times and all the mistakes they made during this generation.
Yeah, because I mean, even think about like the studios that we can rely on, we can count them in our hands and in our fingers. It's like, oh, the Larians, the Kojima, the studios, the CD Projekt Reds, and then, you know, after a while, it's like, oh, we're on our eighth finger, and we're trying to think about who else is left. You know, no more BioWare's, no more Cliff Bleszinski's. You know, no more. Even shout out to Peter Molyneux. He had big visions, but So it's just more difficult to be optimistic about video games with just everything going around it. And it's like the commodification of video games. It's like it's a business. Like games are more of a business than they were back in the day. Like back in the day, of course they were making their business as well, but at least they resembled something as forms of art. And these days, like, it's like few and far in between.
I feel like Brett jumped in and jumped out. I feel like Brett, obviously not Brett. There he is. There's Brett. I called him and he came. So I feel like when it comes to this sort of stuff, like those cornerstone, like why we were able to get so many like iconic franchises and games from the previous era is purely the amount of money that those things cost. You could always afford to be kind of crazy and creative, you know, because it's like, okay, as long as you come under budget, you know, do whatever the fuck you want, right? that's like, you know, a lot of those older games. But as the industry, you know, more and more starts to resemble Hollywood, you know, now it's like, okay, now we can't justify you making this thing unless you hit these certain points. You need to have this, because we know that the rest of the industry loves these games. You know, it's like why when during the PS3, Xbox 360 era, everybody had to have a tagged on multiplayer mode because they felt, oh, well, you know, it's not worth it in some way. Or, we need to keep these people engaged and keep them longer on the thing. So there's more time between these titles, you know, stuff like that. What do you think, Brian?
Okay, kind of forgot what the question was again. Sorry.
Oh, so the question was, it's you know, essentially saying with more there being less and less great games and hardware getting more expensive, you know, what is the point of gaming? This is from Eurocar 9.
Yeah, what's the point of the video game industry in general? Like, how has it changed since, you know, from the years when you used to play back in the day?
I can definitely see where Eurocar is coming from, because things do look very dire. But I think it's just it's about finding what games you do like, which will obviously be a lot harder because there won't be as many big games as there usually are. And then just having fun with those and ignoring everything else, because that's how I do it now. Because I reached that point years ago where I'm like, yeah, most games that are shown on these stages, I really don't enjoy that much. So let's find some obscure games to play and play those. I mean, like right now, I just refound this one game that I played the demo for 2 years ago, and I could not remember the name of it to save my life. It's part of like a new genre, well, I say a new genre, a new type of game called anomaly games, which are basically, I guess, a digital version of Where's Wally / Where's Waldo. I don't know what you call it in the States. I'm guessing something like that. It's a spot the Waldo difference type game. Okay, yeah. It's like a spot the difference type game where you just walk through the level and you spot the difference. It's very simple, yes, but it's interesting because, again, it's just a different type of game. You know, it's not mentally taxing. It's not trying to figure out the best build with all these weapons you have and skills and buffs and all sorts. No, it's just you walk through, you spot the difference. If things are looking weird, you go back, and that's it. And this type of genre of games is, again, it's just taking off really quite well. And I think it's just a case of finding games that you like the look of and playing them. That's all I can really say, because that's what I do.
Hey, Brian, you said earlier in your answers, like, play more obscure games. But I did. And it was my game of the year.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I'm surprised you said play more obscure games, and I'm surprised you didn't catch your own own thing.
I was trying to avoid that.
He has 33 reasons why he didn't think about that specific one.
33 and a dog.
He saw the bait. He was just hoping not to draw attention to it.
What do you think, Chris?
I don't think gaming is dead. Yeah, I mean, console gaming and AAA gaming is screwed it up because they were chasing the live service grail, which required way more resources, way bigger budgets, and way more time to develop, and didn't pan out. But they were constantly chasing this live service grail. So we got, what did we get? We got less titles, we got less experimentation, and look at what people are enjoying. Like Brian's talking about the anomaly games. I've seen games like that. There was one on a train where you had to spot the difference, or else this like monster comes on and chases you. And those games are interesting. I watched a playthrough of Peak. I think Adam and I got it. It's like, yeah, one day we'll, you know, when we have time, we'll play it. I got the RV game. It's just a silly game where you're just out in the country trying to get your RV through this dangerous part of the forest. And these games are fun. So I don't think gaming is dead. I think there's going to be a shift in where people go to AA and indie titles and stuff. And there's more to enjoy. It's just coming from a different resource. So is there a reason to invest in like a PS6? Well, as long as Sony is encouraging indie development, you could get those experiences on there. Then maybe if it's worth it to you along with the titles they have. But honestly, I think as long as you could still get a reasonably priced PC or a Steam Deck or something, I would just do that and enjoy, you know, more experimental stuff, more AA stuff. So I don't think gaming is that. I think AAA has screwed themselves. I would honestly like to see that collapse. I'd like to see EA and all that stuff just implode right? And just stuff rise out of it because, and IPs get auctioned off because honestly, I think there's way more talented people like the Clear Obscure guys or whatever, who if they had a hand on an IP like Assassin's Creed or something else could do a fantastic job with it, even change it around to from what it was, right? So I would love to see that. I don't know if that will happen, if that's how things are kind of collapsing slowly, if that's where stuff will go with Ubisoft, especially since Tencent seems to want to hold on to the bigger IPs like that. But we'll see what happens. But there's just a shift. I think AAA is screwed itself, and AA and indie stuff is on the rise.
Let me ask you a question, kind of inference to that. Do you think the distinction is as necessary as it used to be? Because like back in the day of big box retail, like if you didn't hit a certain price point, you were seen as not quality or not worth it or not caring, you know. But like now we're dealing with digital storefronts and people who are okay with anything from a $20 to a $50 to a apparently $80 game. So like is the distinction, like are we moving into a world where we don't really even need to have those separate categories?
I don't think that they matter as much. Well, I mean, granted, that's my opinion.
And in terms of physical retailers,
yeah,
with physical retailers, what the where you'll see the distinction you're talking about is with the hardware, really. Like I honestly have gone into several places and I don't see Xbox at all. I go into my Target, I see the Nintendo section, I see the PlayStation section, I see like some other stuff there, but I don't see Xbox. And Costco, Xbox is gone. And Sam's Club, too, Xbox is gone. It is in an Xbox section. So it's crazy. Like that, it's really affecting the hardware. In terms of software, though, I mean, indie guys like AA and things like that, unless they're, unless somebody picks it up, like Limited Run or Manny, you mentioned another one. There was another thing like was, Limited Run where they'll.
It was like called Strictly Limited Games or something like that. I think it's a UK one.
Right, but other than that, I mean, and you're going to buy it through them, right? There's that, you're not going to find that in Best Buy or Target. So maybe the distinction with software is getting blurred, you know, more. And and you know, it's fine. That's Microsoft and all these guys. This is the bed they made for themselves, and we just see things play out. But I think AAA is still collapsing. It's not collapsing like it did in the early 80s, like in 83 and stuff, where it's just like bottomed out, right? And that it was like bad. It's just been a slow decline. And what comes out of it, I mean, Sony seems to be coming through it and Nintendo, but other than that, there's a rise of indie stuff. And then there's a rise of these alternative systems, right, running on Linux. You have Steam, you have the RG Ally, you have the Legion Go, and I'm sure there'll be other players in there. And there's people looking backwards, too. There's a rise of these FPGA-based consoles that, like, one's a Super Nintendo, one's a Genesis, one's a, now they got an N64 one coming out, and, you know, so, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, but in terms of AAA, in terms of people buying into live service, I think that's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, I feel like Helldivers was a kind of a delineation mark, and I'm not really sure why, like, but between Helldivers and Arc Raiders, like, even the big Call of Duties, like it just seems like nobody knows where the next thing is coming from. And honestly, I'm kind of good with that because I feel like, you know, big box retailers artificially inflated stuff. Like it just comes down to like, look, if this game's going to have to be $60 to be on the shelf, then it should have A, B, C, and D in it. And they're like, does the game need D in it? No, but like, everything's open world now, so we're gonna do that. Like I feel like we got this weird place of like, you know how some places will they'll be like, we need to spend the budget so that we get the same budget next year. I feel like we got into that kind of mentality and we didn't really need to, and then we needed to start justifying big ballooning budgets, and it just became like an Ouroboros of stupid eating its own tail. And I think now we're starting to see talent break. Like one of the things that blows me away is some people on Clair Obscur were looking up YouTube videos on how to make video games. Like, it's just, we live in a world where the information is out there. And I'm not saying that you should launch a video game while YouTubing how to make video games. Like, that's ballsy. But at the same time, like, between crowdsourcing and information that's out there and just AI, if you can get it to stop hallucinating long enough to give you an actual answer, like, AI is a great first first place, like, or like get basic chatbots for like finding information, just, you know, source everything and ask it twice. It feels like some kind of weird fae creature like that. Like, yeah, I gotta ask everything three times just to make sure it's not lying to you. But, you know, beyond that, I think that we're getting to the point where we can, we have so much information available that if you take talented, passionate people and give them free access to it, like, it's insane what they'll do. But the problem with that is that it is, you know, as much as I absolutely hate to fucking say it, it's kind of giving credence to what people were saying about Larian, in that, look, not everybody's going to be able to hit these marks, right? Like, there's a kid that, like, taught himself fucking rocket science and, like, got into MIT at, like, 12 by teaching himself with ChatGPT or some shit. Like, not everybody is going to be that guy. Just because we see the tools coming out doesn't mean we're going to see all the talent keep up with the tools, but it's going to let some talent really kind of push forward. And I think that maybe seeing it as dying isn't as good as seeing it as I think we're entering a restructuring phase where the things that motivate people to make games kind of change, right? Like, you don't have to worry about publishers so much anymore. You just have to worry about digital storefronts and directly with customers. So, like, I don't see a lot of the things that we needed AAA for. Like, we don't really need those things anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it would be just be the difference of a big side of like a big studio and a independent studio. It really doesn't, the levels, and obviously with games like, again, a very iconic game from last year, it showed that they could do games, you know, and, you know, also another company did, you know, they could do games that feel on the level of those, you know, of those sort of AAA titles, but cost probably half or less than half than what they did to originally make them.
Well, I mean, even if you could just keep up with them, like the group of people that left CD Projekt Red and are making that new game that looks kind of like The Witcher. Like, I look forward to a world. I hope for a world in which that kind of thing happens more, because that ultimately gives the creatives more power. Like, you can buy the company, you can buy the IP, you can buy the building and all the fucking computers, and the talent can still fucking walk, form their own company and beat the brakes off of you. So you're going to treat them right. You're going to pay them what they need paid for. Like, they're just going to walk away and build something new that trounces you every single time. Because, you know, when you're talking about talent like that, at least I know, like in the tattoo industry, like, you can build the best tattoo shop to accommodate all the best artists, and all your fucking talent leaves, and you're left with the fucking scrubs. The talents, like, reconglomerate somewhere else, and then that becomes the new thing, and it becomes this never-ending cycle. And anybody who thinks they could just jump in there as not a tattoo artist and just bridle this shit and have it make money, it never works. It doesn't, and it leaves this place where, like, the senior creatives almost have to be the ones in charge. And so I would very much like to see gaming follow, or game development follow that kind of trend where, like, oh yeah, you know, these guys just keep making games. Like, it's almost like the difference of when we really started to see comic book talent have names, like in the Marvel era. You know, before it was, you know, when and I realize I'm probably grossly misreferencing this, but, like, before that we had, you know, companies like, you know, like, oh, Detective Comics, things like that. But Stan Lee really kind of, if I'm not mistaken, tried to push, like, actual people, like, so that they became, like, recognizable names, and that's when we kind of entered into the golden age of comics. And again, like, I'd like to see that kind of happen in gaming, and it does a little bit, but a lot of times we see, like, oh, what's Neil Druckmann? Never mind. So, like,
it's an interesting thing, though, because it's like all of these, the whole game industry all started small. Like, every single one of these big names that we know about now, they all were small, like, punk rock companies doing, like, id Software. They weren't, like, a big, they were just producing the game on their own. Like, every single one of these names that we hear now, with the exception of, like, a PlayStation and, like, a Microsoft, you know, even Nintendo. But with all these companies that we've heard of, all started off small, making these really cool little games. And then once they got big, then they just became these, like, you know, a problem. It's almost like It's like the difference between Metallica before they got, you know, when they were still on the way up, and Metallica now, where they're this insane, like, you know, arena selling like game. Like, they don't have the edge. They don't really make very good music these days, you know.
Yeah.
But they'll sure as shit play you the classics over and over and over again to remind you that they were good at one point.
Yeah.
What's up, Tony?
Yo, I'm on my laptop, so I don't feel like setting up.
All good.
Couple of quick things. You guys can hear me good though, right?
Yeah.
You sound great.
Okay. I don't know. By the way, I don't know what the question is, but I just wanted to jump on something Brett said, because, you know, I'm a nerd for this stuff. So yeah, basically what you were alluding to was, you know, DC kind of had the archetypal superhero, right? You know, the good guy, never fallible, all this shit. Then Marvel Comics, you know, in the 60s, during the Silver Age of comics, that's when Stanley's like, hey, I'm going to write real people, or closer to real people. Like, the Fantastic Four was like a revelation, because there were superheroes that were bickering with each other. That had never been done before. Anyway, what's the actual question? I'm just jumping in, you know? Anybody know what the fucking question is?
I think it was basically the game industry dying.
Oh, go ahead, Brett.
I think it was the game industry dying, but I think you know Eurocar, so like, you could probably paraphrase.
Oh, Eurocar asked the question, eh?
Yeah, Eurocar 9. He said, I'll read the question.
He's got pictures of him. It's weird. It's uncanny.
It's there and on OnlyFans. The question is, we're getting less and less great games, and gaming hardware is getting more and more expensive. My question is, what's the point of gaming?
Yeah, no, gaming's fucking trash now. You get nothing but remakes, remasters, and now we have the added bonus of everything costing more. I don't think if we keep going at this trajectory, it's going to be sustainable. That crash is absolutely coming. If we keep going in this trajectory, if things change, there may be some hope, but I don't want to sound like a fucking doomer, but I don't see any hope for gaming right now. I think there's going to be a big crash, and then things are going to reset. But if you keep, here's a bright point. When we had the crash in 1983, it made gaming better. So maybe we need that correction, you know?
Yeah, bro, what the people in charge have golden parachutes. Why would they not drive it off a cliff?
Yeah. So, you know what? Let them fucking drive it off the cliff, you know? I'm at the point where I'm like, yo, let the shit burn, bro. Let's see what happens when the forest grows back, you know?
So some people want to see the world burn, Master Wayne.
Yeah. So what's the point of gaming? Listen, you still got your backlogs, and there's still some good double A's out there. It's not like gaming's completely done, but yeah, this is definitely the bleakest I've seen gaming. Like, you can't tell me there was a worse generation than this. There wasn't.
Oh, shit. I have a question for Brian. Is Brian here? Yep. Hiding in the back somewhere? Okay, Brian. I'm reading the tea leaves here. So, after the console market basically collapses in on itself, like a dying star, do you think that PC gaming will continue to be able to hold the line of basically of customer rights? Like, it's been the last bastion of us not getting fucked for how many decades now? Do you think that after the console market basically collapses in on itself, and all of the investors and greedy shareholders turn their eyes to the remnants of gaming that hasn't been bastardized, aka PC gaming, Do you think PC gaming will still be able to come out clean the other side, or do you think it's inevitably going to be corrupted and destroyed too?
And Brian, before you answer, Brett, are you also taking into account the price of components for PC?
I don't think it'll matter, because I think one thing that, again, like, not paying for internet, that adds up. That adds up real quick. That's $120 a year at least, easy. Like, how many years do you need to own a console? Like, if you, like, how much have you paid for your PlayStation, really? Not just the PlayStation, but the cost of being able to go online every month for the entirety of the time that you've owned it. Probably paid more than a grand for that shit, just to have it, to be able to go online.
Very interesting question, Brett.
That is a phenomenal question.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you, Ghost of Rich.
Again, the thing is, there is no... I think because it's not centralized, it can weather the storm, because there'll always be some form of outlet that people can go to. And yeah, I am quite concerned about the prices of things. I think this is probably one of the few years in my life I'll ever say don't buy or make a PC right now. It's not worth it, because it's not worth it at this point. So if I were to ignore the prices issue, then I'd think that it can, simply because majority of people that were liking the consoles for what they were, they won't like the idea of gaming on a PC, so they won't. And I think that will help it survive and continue as is. Because even now, there's tons of games that come out that are only on PC. Again, going back to the Anomaly games that Chris and I were talking about, I've not seen any of them come on consoles. So I think there'll be enough to sustain it, but it just won't be it won't be your GTAs that will be there, which I'm fine with.
Cool. Thank you.
Yo, Carlos, you want me to take it from here?
Yeah.
You want to jump on? Yeah, jump on.
Yeah. Did everybody get their turn?
Yep, on that yes. one, yeah.
All right, let's go for a less controversial question for Mr. Lego Bro. Will AI end up hurting the game industry?
Yes.
You know my fucking answer, so I'll let you guys answer this shit.
I would say on.
It's already hurting it, motherfucker.
It's already hurting it because of just the all of the hardware stuff that's going into it. So it's a weird Ouroboros that's going on right now. It's like, you know, they're like, you know, you hear things, the situations where studios are saying like, oh, hey, you know, we really want you to use AI during the process of making this. But it's like, but wait a minute, you're probably not going to be able to make the game that this AI is being used for, because the AI, all of the hardware companies have decided to go full in on AI.
I saw that Asus news, bro. What the fuck?
I'm looking at my Asus monitor right now. I'm like, what's wrong with you people? Like, every single one of these guys are going toward, like, toward this
the white whale.
The white whale, yeah. Here. And I get it. There's a lot of money in that industry, but I'm like, can one of these guys be like, hey, listen, we are going to, with the exception of Dell. Dell's the only one that said, hey, listen, we're just going to pull off the stupid AI garbage on there because nobody's using the damn thing.
Yep. It's already hurting it, man.
Yeah. So,
I mean, there's certain aspects of the video game industry where undeniably it's hurt it, and that we mentioned it earlier, but it's the price of the hardware components, whether it's consoles, yeah. Whether it's PC parts. I mean, RAM prices are ridiculous. Jagon probably is, you know, living in a gold mine where, you know, probably has a whole bunch of DDR5 RAM just lying around. It's going to be called the DDR5 standard now. The U.S. government's going to adopt and replace gold and the dollar.
You know,
one small thing. My girlfriend, you know, has been watching the prices of her RAM, but she has got some pretty high end RAM, and she goes, she's like, you know, maybe this is a slight gift in disguise, because maybe it'll mean that people will actually finally optimize their games properly.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been having that conversation a lot with some of my team members. They're like, hey, maybe they'll optimize their fucking games now. But yeah. Again, it's very difficult to be optimistic about the gaming industry at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, and don't get me wrong, and maybe Brett will allude to this, because I feel like Brett is the most optimistic out of all of us when it comes to AI.
Yeah.
So there can be aspects of AI that help streamline some parts of video games that, you know, maybe take studios a long time to do. I don't know what those things are. I don't know, but I won't, you know, say that that's not possible. But at the time, you know, at the current time, it's just everything. It seems like it's bad, whether it's the skyrocketing hardware prices or the AI slop, and you know, it's not looking good.
Yeah, just to be clear, I'm not so much friendly as hesitantly acceptant. Like, I thought of a good way. I kept forgetting to say this every time we talked about it. Like, as much as I want to be like, yeah, fuck AI, fuck things made by machines, how many of y'all bought your Christmas list off of Etsy versus how many of y'all bought your Christmas list off of Amazon? Like, it's the world that we live in that, like, look, machine-made things are cheaper and shittier and people buy them. And I hate that, but, like, again, did anybody on here buy their entire Christmas list off of Etsy or a good portion of it?
I'd make a joke, but I don't want to get in trouble.
I didn't buy anything off of anywhere for nobody for Christmas. Also, by the way, Amazon also had record lows this year.
Because, I mean, that's excellent.
Yeah, because nobody has money.
Nobody's got money.
I mean, that part's not excellent. But my whole point is, like, with AI, yeah, does it suck? Absolutely. Is that going to stop it? No, it's not. And it's so, like, it's probably a better option to try and find the best of a bad situation than to, you know, ignore it. So I'm looking, but, and I think, yeah, maybe the silver lining here is that smaller companies can leverage the same tools, because in theory, AI with proper oversight should just be able to increase efficiency. It should just give you a small team of idiots that work under you that do a terrible job and that you then go through and clean up. So if you really have like a true talent composing it, you know,
the
maybe
problem is now you need a team to clean up AI's dumb shit because it keeps getting stuff wrong.
But see, this is the thing. I don't think you need a whole team. I think you need a person to clean up a team of AI stuff. And like that's how the pyramid is built. And does that mean that like our job now becomes more of an editor than a producer? I mean, maybe. I think all of us will be dead by the time any of this really happens. So like, you know, this is more a hypothetical for future generations. But like, you know, I think, yeah, in the future, you're going to see a lot of people using it to kind of generate base content and then, you know, fix stuff or direct it. You see a lot of middle managers. But you're also going to see, I guess, a new rise of people who are really talented at that weird middle management role. Because, like, maybe there are people out there who are really good at being project director. If you give them a really powerful AI, do they need a team? I don't know. Like, that's a new frontier. But for the most part, no, fuck that noise. It's not going to help anybody, and it's going to have big companies exploited because it's full of shitty people. But, you know, that makes it a tool. You know, it's a knife. You're like, oh, it's a knife. Somebody's going to use it to stab somebody else and take their money. Yeah, you could also use it for cooking, but that first thing's probably going to be the thing that happens.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you heard stories about companies letting employees go saying, oh, because we have AI, but they're just using that as an excuse. They actually don't use the AI. They just use that excuse to fire people. That's happening now.
I mean, yeah, but they've been doing weird shit, like having jobs up that aren't actual jobs and like not hiring or having, like, they've been doing, I do not understand all of the bullshit that's going on with the business world. And then contrary to that, you have the quiet quitting. Like, there's just so much weird shit that's going on there. I'm just like, I don't even get this. But I will, and again, I'm not really super interested until AGI comes in.
Yeah, because it's not. And I'm glad you bring that up, Brett, because just so our listeners understand, when we're saying AI in this context, we're talking about large language models. We're not talking about anything that's actually intelligent, because it isn't.
Yeah, it can simulate. Okay, so like, take this as an example. And I like this idea. Like, if I had an AI that answered all of my messages, right? And it answered them right away in a timely fashion with roughly the intelligence and allure of a really stupid Californian girl. Y'all know the type I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't need a fucking genius at the wheel. I need somebody to ask, how big, where at, what is it, do you have a budget, and do you have any reference photos? Right, and that's because that's what the front girl used to be in a tattoo shop. You go in, she'd be the hospitality between the half feral tattoo artist in the back and the clientele, and so she'd, you know, figure all that out, and then she would just condense all that into just a small ball of information and walk in the back and be like, hey, I got somebody wanting a fist sized tiger on their left bicep. Anybody got $200 for it? Be like, yo, I'll do it, and it made everything easier. Right. So, am I opposed to the idea of an AI doing that? No, not at all. Like, do I? Because, yeah, like, the problem is, like, that job's disappeared. Why? Because nobody wants to fucking pay a front girl. Because despite them actually making more money, it's hard to get them to prove that they're going to make more money. And it's hard for them to make a living. So, like, it's just kind of a lose-lose. But that's one of those situations where, like, would AI be good there? Yeah, sure. But does that mean it's just going to condense that information and then have to hand it off to, like, still a person? Yeah. Because I don't want to try to put it into like some fucking language model art thing and generate a tattoo because it doesn't know what the fuck it's doing. Like, it still needs a person in the driver's seat, but man, some of that monotonous stuff of, because I'll be honest too, like, and those of you out there, I'm sorry, behind the scenes stuff, talking to your client sometimes, like, is, it's like pulling teeth. You just want, like, you want those four questions answered, and it's going to take you 30 minutes to do it. They're just going to want to tell you everything about, like, their aunt and their hamster and, like, and just getting through. So, like, getting through the noise, and because they can tell you about all that during the tattoo, and trust me, they will. But, like, just getting through all of that is kind of the reason why there was that separation to begin with, because the tattooers are like, I want to be making money. I don't want to be out there forming close personal relationships with people at a bar, you know, outside of work hours. So large language models, sure, there's reasons for it. But yeah, like, once we're talking about artificial, like, true AGI, even if it's dumb AGI, now we've got something, because I am a transhumanist. I believe that the true future of the species is probably going to be everybody has an AI put into them, because, and I argue with this with anybody, probably not on this show, but somewhere else, like, a human being, we're an idea, right? Like, we're not a thing born into our bodies. You take a human being fresh out of the womb, put them into a room, and don't have them interact with a person. They're not taught social skills. They don't develop the ability to talk, to reason, to learn. They're an animal. They're not a human being, right? Like, they need the software put in them, and they need the software put in them at a young age, because if they don't, their brain doesn't fucking develop right, and they can't learn to talk or write or anything like that. They can learn a handful of words like a fucking dog. And it's a scary fucking thing, but it's convinced me truly, humanity is an idea. The idea, what we are, is a fucking idea. And there will be a time where we merge, you know, around 4 or 5, you get your own AI consciousness that's allowed to just spindle up an internet worth of knowledge at the drop of a hat. God forbid it doesn't hack your neurosystem. You know it's going to, though. It's a dystopian future. But, like, I think any planet-faring species is going to inevitably be genetically and cybernetically augmented. So it's an inevitability, people. Part of our evolution. But again, that's AGI. And
unless you find these senders and burn them to the fucking ground, people. You could do that. You escape from New York style. Burn it down, people.
Or Sarah Connor style, right? What she was doing.
There you go. Cyberdyne system. Burn that shit down. You don't have to accept it. It doesn't have to be an inevitability. Burn them down. Take them to the streets and fucking shoot them.
For what? No. Have you seen humanity? Have you seen humanity? Like, dude, it's if it's not AI, I'm on team fucking meteor. At this point, I'm in it just for the fucking plot. Like you're gonna let me talk to a super intelligence before the world burns down? Fine, because we're gonna fucking burn it down ourselves. We're monkeys with sticks. I'm surprised we got this fucking far. I'm surprised we're getting dumber and our egos are getting bigger.
We're gonna. I think the ending of our universe is just going to be the ending A, ending B, or ending C of Mass Effect. That's that's our future.
Just whatever color it is. Look, here's my thing. If it's a choice,
and then we got to get back on the topic.
If it's a choice between an AI, a super AI that may or may not be benevolent, and Elon Musk, I'm going with the AI.
I'll go with Elon Musk. He's at least human. I will absolutely not listen to anything fucking computer tells me. No fucking way. I will do the opposite on purpose, you know, because I have free will. That's a whole other story, you know.
Because I've seen
too many of those sci-fi stories where it's like one computer in a cave telling people what to do. Like, nope, not for me, sir.
I like how you just like, I'd rather have somebody tell me what to do because I have free will.
No, I didn't say I'm going to blindly listen to him, you know?
What's that?
I'm just saying if an AI tells me something and Elon tells me something, I'm going to weigh what he has to say. I may disagree with it, but I'm absolutely not going to listen to anything the AI tells me. No fucking way. But that's a whole other story. Anything else you guys want to say about the industry being cooked?
quick side note, that what you talked about, the computer in a cave that controls the society, that's Landru from Star Trek.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We've seen too many of those stories.
I just saw that episode again. Stupid Landru was like, yes, Landru knows all.
Yeah.
See,
Twilight Zone episodes, we've seen that too, you know.
Bro, you talk about cave, like, I think the first person to, like, integrate with an AI is going to be like the first person coming out of Plato's cave and trying to come back in and explain to everybody, like, nah, the shadows on the wall, that's not real life. Real life is like this weird, you know, series of magnetic fields that repel each other. And we're all going to be like, you crazy bitch. That AI made you lose your mind.
Yeah, Plato's cave is a trip because on one hand, you're like, I want to be the guy controlling the shadows. But like, yeah, but you're still in the cave too, bitch. You know?
Well, no, it's like the whole, like, the guy that gets out and then he comes back and he tries to explain to everybody what the real world's like. They're like, that's not the real world. The shadows are the real world, you fucking Matrix. Moron.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. Anything else you guys want to say about this? We'll take that as a no. Move on to the last question of the night. Also from Mr. Lego Bro. Since Meta appears to be giving up on VR, is it dead? Now, my question is, I have not kept up with this. Is Meta giving up on VR? I haven't heard about that.
Oh, yes, they have. They've.
Is it because of AI too?
No, it's because they're investing in wearables. So.
Yes, that's right.
AR glasses, you know, the stuff they're doing with Ray-Ban, a bunch of other
things. Yes,
yes. So that means that all of their game divisions, they're essentially just, they're just killing all of them. So.
Yes.
So far, it's been Armature. It's been.
We talked about it on a Thursday show.
We talked about Thursday.
No, thank you for reminding me. You're right about that. Even though, ironically, VR headset is a wearable too. But I know, yeah, they mean the stupid Ray-Bans and shit.
Yeah, they mean that they mean something that's not as intrusive, right? It's not. It's
I'm going to so say, VR is not dead in general. I think it's going to be around because it's kind of proven itself. It didn't go mainstream, but it sold enough, right? Where it kept around. But yeah, I think Meta's done. They're done.
I think they're done with it. But I think places like, you know, like Steam has got their own one that's coming up, or they have one already. I think it'll be something that'll stay in the more enthusiast range rather than the mainstream range.
Porno games, man.
The idea of you know, essentially some regular guy getting hooked on you know, VR and laying in their room. I don't think that's really a reality. Like some of those cyberpunk things where you see the guy who's just like, he's like a skeleton. He doesn't take care of himself and he's just got this VR thing. I don't think that's a reality, but I do think that maybe, you know, just for enthusiasts, like for people a little bit more interested, you know, into that sort of side, I think that's the space that it'll make its money.
Manny, would you say that Meta is giving up on VR just like it gave up on the metaverse?
Yep, they gave up. I wish that those
remember that shit. The metaverse. We're all gonna live in the metaverse.
Yeah, I wish. You know?
They gave up on it because it was fucking stupid. That's why.
Well, no, it's because it wasn't making the money they wanted to make with it. That's the whole problem.
Oh wow, right? People didn't want digital real estate. I'm shocked.
Yeah, like I think. Like, to be retarded. Honest, like, I feel like the, you know, Oculus should have, like, just like Oculus and just like all those game studios that decided to jump on that bandwagon, I feel like they shouldn't have did it. I think Oculus should have just stayed on its own and just did what they
Meta
were doing.
Bought them. You know, they had no choice.
But Meta bought them. Here's the thing. They had to agree to that.
Yeah.
They could have just said, "Nah, we're doing great on our own here with this thing." They didn't need to take that check. Just like every single one of those game studios, you know, like what is it, Ready at Dawn, which was the first of those studios to be closed. They didn't need to take it. I mean, granted, the indie space is, you know, the independent studio space is difficult, but I don't know. Just hooking yourself onto a big company, you know, what eventually down the line, it's something like that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it sucks because a lot of the studios that some of the studios that they did have signed on there, they were good studios. They made some pretty cool games. Like, you know, again, we have Ready at Dawn and we have, you know, the guys that made the Sly games. We had Armature who did a bunch of like ports, like the Metal Gear HD remaster on the Vita and a bunch of other ports to other things. They did some stuff for Fortnite. So they had a lot of decent studios there. Sort of like this, it's the same sort of thing that we saw happen with Amazon, right? Where they invested in these studios and then they just shuttered them all.
And Google,
same thing, right?
The same thing.
I feel like the danger there is just the fact that these big companies want to invest in these things, and they, you know, that's at some point, and it sucks that it happened so quickly that, you know, that they're just gonna, you know, cut everybody off.
Yeah, what about the rest of you guys? What do you think about VR?
Yeah,
I think it's going to continue. I'm sorry, you can go first.
Oh, okay. I'll go real quick. I pretty much agree with you guys. I feel like the technology for, you know, the type of virtual reality, augmented reality, is getting a lot smaller. So the whole integration with the Ray-Bans and stuff like that. I feel like that's the way of the future. The Google Glasses were ahead of its time.
Yeah.
So that's, I feel like, right. That's...
And they were ugly. Like, they were ugly ass things, by the way. Those,
yeah, but now they look good, yeah, baby.
Yeah, they're not Ray-Ban.
Now they stylish. These things are the way of the future because they're just way more practical. They're way more practical. There's even, and Brett knows about these, like the X-Real glasses. Like, you can connect anything into glasses that look, those sunglasses. You can wear them on a plane. And
X-Real's fucking legit, bro.
Mm-hmm. Bro, I got them.
Yeah, he has them, yeah.
So, like, I feel like that's the way, man. That's the way.
Yeah, like, it's honestly, it's just personal wearable, like, yeah, because you can get, like, a huge fucking screen. They, like, oh, it's a 200 screen from 12 feet away. I'm like, just, it's not as big as you'd think, but it's also, you know, pretty big. It's not, like, sitting at a computer monitor big, but it's, you know, it's a big-ass TV in your living room kind of big, and, that shit is awesome. But, yeah, I agree. I think there's going to be a natural convergence between AR and VR and just wearable tech like that, right? Like where those three things combine into, oh, well, you have an all-in-one set of sunglasses that are a display. That's where it's really going to hit off. And I think that we're going to be driven there. Like, we've hit a point in VR where, like, yes, it's fun and there's cool stuff that we can do with it. But more so, it's being integrated in things. Like, they're doing virtual surgeries and shit. So the innovation is going to be driven by the industrial sector and the military sector and the medical sector and probably the porn sector. Everything but video games, ironically, until we get to a certain point of sophistication where, like, all three of these things have converged. And then I think we're going to see it. I think that's when it'll pop off. Because right now, it's even still, like, the market hasn't, it's in this weird place where it hasn't sold enough units to demand really good development, but it hasn't had enough really good development to create a killer app. And yeah, they figured out a lot of ways to get rid of the motion sickness and whatnot, but it's just such a big, cumbersome feeling thing that, yeah, I think that now that we're seeing the wearables, I think that's, that intersection is where things are going. Not Apple's $3,000 fucking train wreck monstrosity, but, you know, we're something that, I mean, fuck, like the glasses I got them for like $250-$300, something like that. You know, the price of a computer monitor. So you talk about something that's $500 and that, you know, is VR and replaces my computer monitor and isn't so cumbersome that I actually want to wear it. Now you've got something, and it's going to be that, until we get there. How much would I spend on that?
I don't know. How much were the glasses?
They're normally like $300. I got them for like $250. They go on special on sale pretty regularly.
$300. So that's like 2 gigabytes of RAM these days.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, the thing I found kind of shocking was it's really in line with a lot of the monitors I was looking at. You know, similar kind of vibes and specs, because it was, you know, was it hey, I'm gonna get a second monitor, or hey, I'm gonna get a pair of these glasses, and the glasses, they were a good choice. I really like them.
Yeah, anybody else? VR dead, gone, something else?
Hiatus.
Yeah. Oh man, all right, that's interesting. We got two questions about VR tonight. All right, man, that's all we got. Let's start wrapping it up. See what I want. Oh yeah, shout out to the New York Video Game Critics Circle. I attended the awards tonight. Had a good time. I made fun of Oblivion.
Yes, you did.
And that was funny because what happened is I already had the joke ready about Horse Armor because I was presenting Best DLC. But then Oblivion won Best Remake of the Year. I'm like, oh, hold up. I got to change my fucking script, you know? Yeah. So I was like, with all due respect to Oblivion representative, we're not talking about Horse Armor. I talked to that guy after the fact. He actually appreciated the joke, you know? Yeah, so good times. You know, you can catch it on Twitch right now, VOD or whatever.
Yeah, it's on, we talked about it a little earlier. It's on GameSpot. That was presented on GameSpot. So you can watch.
They fucked up, by the way. They were supposed to give me my own mic, but somebody forgot it. So I had to use the podium one, but you know, I got a loud voice, you know, carry through.
Yeah, and the guy bent it down for you, so it was all
yeah. good. Yeah, shout out to Brady, you know, that's the first time I presented with him. Good guy. He's from, interesting, he's from Esquire. They're not a gaming magazine whatsoever, but he really loves gaming, so he's trying to bring more of that to the magazine, Esquire. Which is okay, really cool, you know? Yeah.
Like the bring,
yeah,
bring
shout out to Harold Goldberg, you know, who holds the whole thing together. He started this whole organization, you know, really good guy. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Mega Ran, really did a really cool thing tonight. You know, his rapping, singing stuff. He's also really good. Mega Ran, Mega Ran was there for the second year in a row. He's my buddy.
He's dope as fuck.
You know, he's a really cool dude, you know.
Yeah, he's dope as fuck.
Yeah. And also shout out to Chris's old boss, Reggie Fils-Aimé. He's my buddy too now.
He's like, hey Tony, hey.
Yeah, so, Chris, like I said, he doesn't talk like that, in real life, you know, when I talk to him.
Yeah, he's not talking business. He's far beyond the business talk now. So I noticed that the two things about your category. First, Indiana Jones wasn't on there. That was interesting.
Yeah, because we didn't nominate it.
It wasn't nominated. The other thing is the actual the director from what the hell is that game? The puppet game was there to accept the award from Korea.
Yeah, Liza yeah. P. Liza P. Yes.
Yeah, they had the director there, which was cool. Like I was surprised he didn't, you know, that he actually showed up. So
yeah, pretty cool. There was another Korean person that showed up as well. But yeah, Manny, the reason, because, you know, we get a list of the games and then everybody selects which games they want. And if it doesn't get selected, it doesn't get nominated, you know. And I still maintain that our award show has more integrity than the video game award show, because you notice that it wasn't just five games in every fucking category, yes. You know. And we held it in January, not in December, you know.
Well, I mean, the Academy Awards holds their things like maybe in March or something like that. Like it's.
Yeah, that's. I wish we had this shit in March. January is fucking nasty in New York, bro.
Oh, well, especially with all the snow, because it just recently snowed up yeah. in the
East. I was talking to people about that. I was like, what's, because last year it was 20 degrees, right? So like, what's worse, that or this? Because it was snowing like crazy. I think I'd rather just take the snow, because by the time I left, it was fine. It was messy and shit, but it wasn't cold. Anyway, let's start wrapping up here. Manny, you got anything to plug?
Yes, you know, TMNT Battle Nexus number 5 with a cover by Kai Randolph and myself, and Blood and Thunder, the series written by Robert Kirkman and drawn by EJ, former Tech Jacket, and Kari, I and I are doing covers for that. We still have a list of covers, so stay tuned for your local comic book store or wherever you download your comics online.
There you go. Yo, Carlos, man, you guys coming back with The Walking Dead?
Yes, whenever that comes back. I don't know what the date is for the next. I think Dead City is next. So whenever that comes back, we'll be back. It's, you know, I am Negan. Shout out to the Coalition with a K. They keep covering everything when it comes to video game, movies, TV shows, everything. And shout out to the TV Terminal.
You know, good stuff. All right, man, we're done here. So make sure you follow Throw It On Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube, join the Discord, and find us on your favorite podcast app. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and shout out to Carlos and Manny for holding it down beforehand. And tonight, you heard the beautiful voices of Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
And Brian Majoma.
Larry people.
All right, guys, we'll be back on Thursday. Later.
Later.
This is...